Episode 279, January 9th, 2017.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
This is the Rob and Joe Show.
The Dave Chappelle and Louis C.K. of Fire Hall Comedy.
The Rob and Joe Show.
This is the racist Rob and racist Joe Show.
Some of their best friends are black.
The Rob and Joe Show, my two favorite guys.
You're listening to the Rob and Joe Show.
Come on, everybody, let's get to the brainstorming.
I worked with Rob and Joe before, and they do an amazing job.
Go back on that Rob and Joe Show.
The Rob and Joe Show. Now on
with the countdown. With a combined 73 firings, if you count marriages in the Baltimore Comedy Factory, here's Rob Mayer and Joe Robinson.
To you live from the Isle of Man, Rob Mayer, Joe Robinson, Marcus Serta, Robbie Robinson back. We're all here. Good evening, good day. It's a brand new world, Celebrity Death 2017, Dan
Ninen. do you know how many people are on the Isle of Man?
I don't. I didn't even know that people live there until last week when we were contacted by their prime minister. Well, not that, but
well, somewhere. I have to imagine that prior to 1992, it wasn't comfortable to live there because fighting to the death was legal. But well, I think if I read it correctly, there's about 80,000 people there.
Well, hopefully we'll be doing a show there soon. I mean, we now have a contact. We're going to catch you up. If you haven't been on the internet paying attention to the world, the big, huge Dan Ninen story blew up. And Joe and I are central figures in this story, quoted quite accurately. We're now known more in the comedy world for helping to out Dan Ninen than we are for anything we've ever done on TV or radio or this podcast. Welcome to the world we live in. Welcome to the show. We've got an amazing Gramps picture that he sent us from a woman. It's I'll say this. If we were going to try to come up with a picture that would be the funniest picture he could get in terms of just a naked woman, this is what we would have come up with, and yet it's real.
Well, should we start describing that? Do you want to go through okay. What we're going to talk about on the show, or are we going to just let's just run with it?
Let's just go with it. If I were to say to you, fellas, there's a naked picture. I have a naked picture of a woman. She has two pierced nipples and a pierced tongue with her tongue sticking out. And she's wearing reindeer ears. So she's got into the Christmas spirit. And she has two tattoos, one on each breast. You're very intrigued.
Sure. You describe, as you just described it, that'd be a picture I'd want to see.
Well, this is not a picture you want to see.
It almost looks like her head is too small for her body. Do you know what I'm talking about? Probably the angle. But she's not attractive anywhere. No part of her. Face, breasts, whatever, no. Even for whatever we see, gut. But it's not just, my dad forwarded that to me. Now, you got to remember, I don't know how he figured out how to forward something. He has a phone.
Shocker.
That's, Robbie, what kind of phone does he have?
I think it's one of those old Nokia flip phones.
It's not a flip phone. It's one that where you know, you lift it up and it has like the whole typewriter on it.
Oh, yeah.
So that's, he's about three generations, not even three. You know, it's not a smartphone. And somehow he managed to forward that picture to me with no backstory. He didn't say anything before or after. He said nothing. Now, he sent me some stories. None of them had anything to do with this picture. He just forwarded this picture, and he gave no explanation. I don't know how he got it. I don't know if, you know, she thought he solicited this. It came unsolicited. You know, they just forwarded it along. Know nothing about it. But I will say this. I don't think we can't share this picture, right? I mean,
well, we'd have to blur the face. We'd probably have to blur the tattoos. Because we can't out this woman. I mean, I'm guessing that this is her yearly Christmas sext. She takes this picture.
It's like
she
a appears Christmas to be card.
Yeah, it's her Christmas card. She appears to be in the maybe in a bathtub. And she's gotta be at least 300 pounds, right?
You do a joke about the confidence of black women.
Yes.
And it's so true. You know, I'm sure Marcus's wife would probably have a problem with this joke, but the reality is they have a different level of confidence. I can't imagine being the male version of this woman and wanting anybody to see any part of any skin on me. It would not be available to the public. And also, I'd be like, well, like even me, I'm like, well, I can't let anybody see without my shirt on. If I'm going to send a picture, it has to be with my shirt on because I don't look good with my shirt off. People can't see that. But I guarantee you, she's like,
I'll send a picture of my junk before I send a picture of me just topless.
Oh, please. Yeah, that's the. But the reindeer ears, that's what makes the picture, in my opinion. It's like, I'm also silly on top of whatever else you see going on here. But I wonder, I mean, she can't think. I know that mid-70s white guys are going to find this attractive.
I think she's doing a numbers game, something that sometimes guys do. They'll just throw out get as many hooks out there as you can. Maybe you'll get a bite. I'm sure there's a guy, some lonely 56-year-old man who's somehow knows her and got this text and has texted her back and says, you know, what the hell?
I'm pretty sure that we can share on as a bonus item photos.
Okay. I mean, if you have a way of doing that, it's for Patreon only,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, only Patreon only, if they dare to look at it.
Yeah, I mean,
I still
this isn't.
Think we need to blur out some things, right? I mean,
sure. I can make that happen.
But you'll get the gist of it. Yeah.
You understand that? I don't think Gramps thinks that this woman finds him highly attractive, and that's why, like, he doesn't. He can't think he's on an island, right? He can't think this girl has a crush on me, because, I mean, this doesn't look like the kind of person that would be singling out Gramps. Do you agree with that?
No, not that I know what that person would look like. I bet you she's sent this picture to at least 10 men.
More than 10. If your price is writing it, you'd need to go. I wouldn't say $1. I'd say 11.
If she sent it to 100 men,
well, Gramps got it. You understand what I'm saying?
How many?
You can't think that Gramps was one of 10. Sorry.
How many replied favorably? How many got back to her with some sort of positive?
Well, here's the deal. My father is probably trying to sell this woman insurance. Not probably. There's 100% chance, right?
Yeah. What else would he be talking to her for?
So I guarantee you that Gramps didn't say. He didn't say nothing. I know that's a double negative. He said something.
You think he replied, like, Merry Christmas to you, too? I mean, what?
He's probably like, Merry Christmas. Don't forget that there's a fire insurance would cost you blah, blah, blah. You know, who knows? He probably started quoting prices after that. I don't know. He's in chat. Yep. My dad just said she already has insurance. So my father has to go collect premiums from her.
I'd like to do. I'd like to have Eric Woodworth, our resident, has no fear of getting naked, fat guy, reenact this picture. And then we'll post, obviously we'll post this, the blurred out one on our Patreon, but then we'll have Eric post his reenactment of this photo.
I'm forwarding it to Eric right now.
Two tattoos. You are?
Yeah.
Here's the deal. When you forward those pictures, you know, you got to be careful, especially when people are married. People aren't going to understand why those pictures are coming through.
I think that Eric's wife has a pretty good grasp on the life that Eric lives and the kind of things that he gets himself into. I mean, this is a woman. He said that she had pictures of some guy's balls in a photo album. I mean, she seems like a fun lady.
You're right.
She's not threatened by this.
And I spent a lot of time with Eric this week. It was the first time I would never get mad at Eric, but it was the first time I wanted him away. I didn't want him. I didn't want him near me. We've talked about him before on this show, Sean Gabbard. He does the murder mystery with us, and he moved out to L.A. But I guess right before he moved out to L.A., he impregnated someone, and he didn't realize that until he was there for about 2 months. And then, shock of shocks, she calls and says, guess what? I'm pregnant. And he comes back, and he marries her. He does what any good noble man would do. So,
wait,
myself.
Didn't Justin Schlegel do the exact same thing but not marry her?
Yes, that's correct. But, and he also didn't move to L.A. But either way, it's nothing like that. But either way. Well, we went to the bachelor party the day before, and that was a lot of fun. All we did was went to a barbecue restaurant, and we just goofed off and laughed for 3 hours. It was a wonderful time.
Can we talk about the barbecue restaurant real quick? I was very intimidated because you don't just order. You have to take your card up. What was it called? Hill Country Barbecue in D.C.?
Yes, in D.C., right.
And you have two lines. You have one for the meat and one for the sides. And then you have this card that they, you know, do check marks of what you got. And, like, it's very soup Nazi-like. If you're not ready, you know, they're like, next! And it's these kind of very intimidating black guys that we're afraid of because we're racist.
Yeah.
And then you, I don't know. Do you want to lean? Do you want to voice? How much do you want?
At the beginning, we should be able to, being novices, kind of, you know, like, hey, what's better? What's good? What, you know? No, they are annoyed that you're there.
Yes.
They're pissed that you're there, the people that are serving the food. And you have to go up with this card. If you don't have one of these cards with you, you can't get food. Well, Rob and I had one card between us because of some error. Yeah. You know, one was on the table. We didn't know. And this guy, I go, hey, he doesn't have a card. He goes, you got to have a card. I'm like, well, how about we both use this one card? And literally, you would have thought I said, hey, I'd like to bang your mom. You're cool with that. He was so pissed. And he threw this meat on you. Is that enough? And I'm like, well, throw a little bit more on there. Like, I didn't know. I mean, I'm telling you, he was so bothered by what we did. And by the way, you know what ended up happening, Rob?
What's
it was
that?
Perfectly fine.
Yeah, it was
perfectly fine. Perfect. There was no reason to be mad. There was no reason to be upset. But it is strange to me that because the food was excellent. I'm not gonna pretend it wasn't anything other.
And
than
our
great.
Waitress was very attentive, and she was good. Yeah.
But I got to imagine the people that run that place. They can't be okay with that. They can't be okay with them trying to intimidate the people who are buying the food, which is exactly what they were trying to do.
You
they
can't seem have... perturbed by the doing the one, the main thing that your job is.
But even
like, you can't be a mailman who gets perturbed that he has to give you the mail. Jesus. Another magazine.
Right.
This is your job.
But perturbed is really kind of underselling it. I mean, this guy was clearly pissed. I'm sorry that I don't know protocol in your, by the way, do you know where else you have to do what you have to do in that restaurant? You know where else you have to do that?
Nowhere.
Right, nowhere. So how the hell would I know to do that? I've never been there before.
Right.
So that means you guys did a bad job making me aware of what was necessary. Anyway, I that's going to change my attitude in terms of going back there. Although the food was pretty good, so I guess I'll just go there again now that I know protocol. But either way, those people should know that the people serving the food are shitty.
Eric just responded to the photograph.
Was he already naked? Did he already pierce his nipples?
He wrote ASL question mark.
AS, what is it? As
age, sex, location.
Yeah. That's from dating sites.
Gotcha. I'm not that cool. All right, continue. Wedding.
So the next day we go into the wedding, and it's kind of shitty, like a guy like you who goes to the bachelor party, but then really this is where you show your true friendship.
Yeah.
Sure, who doesn't want to sit around in D.C. and eat barbecue with a bunch of comics? That's the fun part. But the friend part where you show what this guy means to you is to go to his shitty wedding. That's what really, to sit there, you know, in a church and watch this boring, that's shows the mark of friendship. And you decided you weren't interested in that. So.
Right. Yeah.
We walk in and, of course, you know, it's me and Justin and Eric and Katie, and we're the last people to arrive. And of course, we go in the wrong door. So we're basically walking in where the groom would walk in, right? And the way that they were looking at us, you would have thought we were coming in playing bagpipes. Okay. They, of course, I will reveal this on the bonus show, but Justin Schlegel does something that makes Eric Woodworth start laughing.
Oh, no.
And it is so uncomfortable. There's only about between 20 and 25 people in this giant, you know, and it's the acoustics, it's echoes, and you hear every creak and every, so clearly you can hear Eric trying not to laugh, right?
Of course.
Well, what's the worst thing that can happen to you? What is the worst thing that can happen to you if you are with people who are causing a scene? What, you tell me, what's the worst thing that can happen?
You get scolded by someone in the wedding.
You get scolded by the person officiating, okay? So he's back there like, you know, making all these noises, and she goes, excuse me, I need you guys to move up closer. Like, I need to keep an eye on you dicks. Now,
right.
This guy looks back at us like, you fucking dicks. He looks at us like he...
It's the same guy from Hill Country Barbecue.
Hates us. I wish. It was, of course, Sean's sister's either boyfriend or husband. Like, these are important people to Sean. And we're causing a scene. Now we're in the second row. And Justin has taken a picture of something, and he has blown it up on his phone, and he is holding it and showing the rest of the aisle. And I look over at Katie, and I go, don't look at Justin's phone. Now, of course, as soon as you say that, she looks right. What else is she going to do? She's compelled to do that. So everybody, now I'm not laughing because I am so uncomfortable, and everybody in the row is, nobody is wondering what we're doing. Everybody knows we're the fucking dicks.
Right.
Right. Now, our good friend John Muma is the best man, and he never cracked a smile. I'm sure everybody was annoyed with us. Every single person in there was annoyed with us. Now,
the thing is, these are people that are loose, that are fun people. Like John Muma would love to make fun of anybody or something. So this isn't like uptight people.
Right. Exactly. But
even amongst those people, you stood out as assholes.
Correct. That is 100% correct. But, you know, Eric did two things to draw attention to himself. The first time is when Sean walked out, you know how the grooms and the groomsmen walk out of the side, and then they play the song and the bride walks up. Well, you know, normally when people see the bride, they're like, oh, you know, he does that when Sean walks out. He gasps loud as hell. Okay. He's like, oh my God. And I'm like, God, okay, so that's uncomfortable moment.
I bet
one.
You that's his go-to thing. I bet he does that at every wedding.
I literally almost crawled under the... of course, everybody shoots a look at us. The same guy who had already given us a dirty look is giving us more dirty looks. Then they say, you know how when they say, we need a proclamation or something from the people that are there that are friends and family, where they say that they will support these people. But since it was English and Spanish speaking people, they said it in two separate ways.
Yeah, his wife is Spanish speaking. Yeah.
Right. She's from Colombia. So we were supposed to respond with I will. And then, of course, the other group was supposed to respond with whatever I will is in Spanish. And Eric says it so loud, clearly making sure that every single person in there hears him. Of course, he speaks English.
The Spanish version and the English version.
He said the English. He said, I will. But then as loud as he, hold on a second. Hey, Katie, are you out there? I don't think she's out there, but I wanted, cause she knows the exact quote in terms of what Eric said. But anyway, so now,
you know, who else knows it is Google. So if you want to Google, I will.
I will is yes. That's what Sean said as loud as, I'm sorry. That's what Eric said as loud as he possibly could in a giant church filled with 25 people.
Voyah?
Something to that effect. The reception is in Sean's brownstone in DC. And DJ Knows is the DJ who is, you know, he's playing DJ. The music. Right. Thank you. So Uptown Funk comes on. Now there's only about between 25 and 30 people with the whole thing, and every single person there is on the dance floor with the exception of maybe three or four. Uptown Funk comes on, and that's one of the songs we have a choreographed dance to in the murder mystery.
Right.
Sean and Katie. I'm sorry. Sean and Katie and Eric and Justin all go out there and do a choreographed dance. Have you ever guys ever seen the movie She's All That? Have you seen that movie?
No.
So it's a movie starring Freddie Prinze Jr. and some other girl. I don't know who she is, but basically she's supposed to be ugly. Well, at the end of that, when they're at the dance, they're at a dance when, you know, the climax is about to occur. For some reason, they start playing a song and everybody in the audience happens to know a choreographed dance and everybody does it. It looks so out of place. And this is what this looked like. Like, how do these people know a choreographed dance to this song? Hey, nobody even acts like anything happened. They march out there. They do a choreographed dance. They go to the floor. People are like, okay, yeah. Nobody says a word. Nobody looks at them. Nobody remarks. Nothing. They're just like, this seems reasonable. And then they walked off the floor. And then that was the end of it.
Is it possible because Uptown Funk is such a popular song that maybe they all thought, oh, there must be some YouTube dance to it that everyone knows about?
Right, like the wobble or something like that.
Yeah, because it's such a huge song that they just assumed, oh, maybe there's just some Uptown Funk dance that I'm the one that doesn't know about it, but everyone else knows.
Yeah, I guess it's possible. I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, this people are going to go crazy when they see this happen because, you know, I mean, it was kind of a rowdy crowd. Not super rowdy, but, you know, I mean, there were a bunch of comics there and, you know, different cultures colliding. And they did this and nobody really gave a shit.
So, but no one really cared that I wasn't there, right? I mean, no one really talked about it, did they?
Well, the only person you would have cared if they talked about it would have been the groom, right? Your friend who you, I guess, No, he didn't mention.
No, I went to the bachelor party to support him.
Well, no, like I said, and I mean this, is that the bachelor party is the easy part. Going out.
That's also the part that you spend the most time with the groom.
That's true, but really to show your friendship and support, you go to the thing that is more, by the way, is more important and less fun. That's what you do.
Nah, I disagree.
Okay.
I will say this about Eric, though, and I forgot to mention this last week. He does have a little, you know, he does have some saboteur in him. He likes to, you know, with the abortion song story at the murder mystery, when we were in Albany, we did two stand-up shows in the one in the murder mystery. And the Friday early show was the murder mystery, and the Friday late show was actually a stand-up show. And I was sort of dreading it because I was thinking, well, we would have just done the murder mystery. You know, we're going to, you know, on a high from that or upset from that, depending on how it goes. It's probably going to be dead Friday late show, December 30th. It ended up being a really, you know, packed crowd. It's actually a better audience. It's the audience I wish that we'd had for the murder mystery, not just less so in numbers, but more so in just their ability to participate and get jokes and be into it. But it was one of the best shows that I've been on all year in terms of everybody crushing. Eric, Sean Gabbert, Tommy, then me. From top to bottom, it was pretty much nonstop laughs, except for one portion of the show. Eric is emceeing, and he's doing 10 minutes. And he does 8 minutes off the top, and they're loving him. He's talking about his daughters, and he's this cute, lovable, fun dad.
Oh, God.
And then he tells a story about how apparently if your daughter cries too much, I forget the name of it, it's some disease or something. Not a disease, but some issue. And that if you play a vacuum, if you vacuum, the sound of the vacuum cleaner reminds them of being in the womb, and it takes them back to this place so they can calm. So he does that and it works. But the joke is, I think it just reminded them of all the brothers and sisters that they lost. So,
oh, God.
So he tells an abortion
joke. Another abortion joke.
Right. And they're all like, And all right, that's my time. I mean, he closes on an abortion joke.
Who had to go up after that?
Sean Gabbert. He went up and then made fun of it. It was right back to laughter. But it was literally the only 2-minute chunk of a 90-minute show where they weren't in love with the show. That's our buddy.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, I think he likes to push the envelope. And of course, his brother Jeremy is that on steroids. I think I told this before, but, you know, Jeremy, his brother, gave me a DVD of his, I guess it's his comedy. I don't know if it's performance art, what it is. I haven't watched it. It's in one of the murder mystery, you know, tubs that we keep all the props in. But he wrote on it, and I might have told this already, he wrote on it child porn. He wrote that on the DVD.
Well, that's probably in the trunk of my car. Great.
Now coming up, Now, the it's not like if I had child porn, I wouldn't write that on the DVD. Right? So I guess that is kind of funny, but
it's hilarious.
I don't want to possess that. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, yeah.
It's also a joke that's going to make a lot of people uncomfortable.
Of course. No, yes, that's the one thing that you can't be. You can be a murderer before you can be somebody who fucks kids. You can't be that.
Yes, because we've all understood where a murderer is coming from because we've all wanted to murder someone before. But the other thing is a little weird. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll dive into the huge happenings in the world of millennial Dan Ninen. Rob and Joe should be right back.
Hey, it's Justin from the Justin Scott and Spiegel Morning Show. You may remember me from my critically acclaimed role as Bucky in Death of a Dentist. Well, my next star turn will be in a show called The Newly Dead Game, another original, hilarious, interactive comedy whodunit from the minds of Rob and Joe. Imagine you're in a TV studio at a taping of the very popular game show Clash of Couples. I'll have a starring role, and if you're very, very lucky, you might play a part too. You might even be the murderer. It's going to be incredible, and there's going to be a limited number of performances, so don't miss it.
Next performance, February 11th at Brightbox Theater in Winchester. For upcoming show dates and more info, please visit DieLaughingProductions.com.
So last week we'd mentioned that our comedian and stalker friend Dan Ninen had been outed in, he'd done an article in Forbes magazine. I don't know if it was in the magazine or just the online, but he, as a 35-year-old, that was a millennial, and that was really the point of the story. And then, of course, they had to retract everything or just take it out because it's complete fabrication. And it started to pick up some steam, and we got contacted by this writer of Ben Collins from the Daily Beast. And he had actually emailed me and said, hey, I want to do a story on Dan Ninen. And I understand that you have some history with him. I said, yeah. I called him. I was a little hesitant at first because I didn't know if I wanted to open up the Dan box again, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking about that because, you know, I haven't gotten an email from Dan. When did we do the show with Patrick Melton? I mean, I don't think we've gotten an email from Dan. It might have been a year.
Now, that was like a year and a half ago.
Yeah, and I have him blocked where it automatically just goes into my trash. So he may have emailed me, but I don't believe he has.
My last email from Dan Ninen, group email, obviously, was May 17th of 2015.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so we're getting on 2 years now. So he kind of went away.
Yeah, and I was afraid of poking the bear. But I said, you know what, let's do this. And I had a nice conversation with him, and I gave him your number, and you had a conversation, and we both mentioned J.L. Covan. And anyway, a few days go by, and boom, I see it on Facebook. It's posted. And it's called The Media's Favorite Millennial, in quotes, is 55 years old. And this is an excellent piece. And it ended up being the most read story, most viewed, shared story on the dailybeast.com the entire year, but definitely the week. Keith Oberman retweeted it. It got huge, huge play. I'm getting friend requests. And you and I and JL are quoted quite frequently in this thing.
Yeah, it was so popular that, by the way, this is the biggest thing that's ever happened in my career. It probably says more about my career, right?
Yeah.
But hey, say hello to the Everybody Likes Nobody Likes Onions people. They're listening on their stream as well.
And well, I'm gonna get to that because
Patrick's one of their simulcasting us.
Yes. Well, Patrick Melton, who was, you know, when we talked about going on, that's when really Dan was outed in the inside comedy world. I think this now outed him to the mainstream. But yeah, Nobody Likes Onions, when we had that huge podcast a year and a half ago or whatever it was, where Dan went on there and he was totally exposed, but he still held on to the lie in there. And this, if you're just reading this and you don't know any of the subjects, you might think, well, what do these guys care how old this guy is? He seems, maybe he's just, you know, he's in Hollywood. He wants to skew younger. But then I think at the end, he really gets exposed. Because basically this guy says, he talks for like a couple hours with Dan, the author does. And he says, look, I've got the goods on you. I know I have, let me get to the exact. I have official state documents with his real age on them. They're public records. His timeline with Intel doesn't make any sense. He gives different ages at different times, depending on which publication he's talking to. It's all over. It's okay. The jig is up. So tell me, are you 35 or 55? Then a pause. I'm 35. The mistake is in my birth record. He's going to die on this hill. He would rather perjure himself and go to prison than just to say he's 55, which, Dan, it's a better story if you're a 35-year-old who quits his six-figure job to do comedy and makes it. It's still bullshit.
Well, no, hold on. This story that's happening is the best story.
No, no, I'm saying
the story is
the
one that's being told.
Okay. No. I'm saying if I'm Dan Ninen, people relate to being in your 30s and 40s and stuck in some job you hate and then trying to do something you always wanted to do. That's something that everyone's going to be able to glom onto. Now, the reality is he's not good and it's bullshit, but there's more truth to that than Tim claiming to be 35.
Well, you understand that if he were to have gone on and said, you know, this is strange. Yeah, I represented myself younger because I wanted to be more marketable, and I apologize for that. But, you know, the venom is coming out, and all this hate that I'm getting, all I can say is that I'm sorry. I had no idea that how old I was so important. Like, he could have said, hey, this is why I did it. I had no idea that this many people were going to be harmed by it. Maybe make some people feel small who are making such a big deal out of it. But he still stuck with it. You're absolutely right. He doesn't have any idea how to show diplomacy. All that he can do is, by the way, one thing that my favorite part of that article is, no matter what, he still found a way to call me a loser in the article. But he goes, yeah, Joe Robinson's a guy who went on to tell a bunch of lies about me. But I was going to sue him, but I contacted my lawyer, but it ends up he's a worthless piece of shit who doesn't have anything. So we decided it wasn't worth it. And I tried to explain to Dan, I don't think I'm rich, but I have stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I'm definitely worth suing.
And the other thing is, I brought up the fight to the death story that Dan had in an email chain, had offered to fight you to the death, Joe, on the Isle of Man. And then on a Blue Seed, which is some starter cruise ship, like in the middle of the ocean, where you just go there and start companies and murder people. And this was mentioned, the Isle of Man part, in the article. And then people from Isle of Man, the Isle of Man radio, reached out to you, Joe. And then they actually played a YouTube clip of us talking about this. So the Isle of Man now knows the names Rob Mayer, Joe Robinson, Patrick Melton, J.L. Covan, and Dan Ninen. So the Isle of Man is now a better place.
We're going to be huge on the Isle of Man. But do you know how many people are on the Isle of Man? Do you know what the population is?
I honestly didn't know that people live there until a week ago. So no, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Maybe that much.
I think there's like 75,000 people there, 80,000 people there. But the other thing is that, you know, you can't fight to the death there.
Well, that's unfortunate.
He said it became illegal in 1992. That doesn't seem that long ago.
The Redskins are still talking about their Super Bowl win in 1992. And you could fight to the death in the Isle of Man.
How would Dan know that?
He's only 33. How would he know that?
Yeah, I would be terrified to live on the Isle of Man, wouldn't you? Because I guess both parties have to agree, I'm imagining. But, you know... What happens if you kill somebody with your bare hands and then you go, well, that guy agreed to it. He's dead. It's you. You're never going to know. But my biggest problem about fighting to the death is I don't want to kill somebody. So what's my benefit? Even if I win, I'm not going to try to kill Dan.
We don't want to die. I mean, the alternative is worse. So,
well, you know, when that article came out, my fear wasn't at a 10, but it wasn't a 0.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because the truth is that, you know, his career is going to be different now. I mean, anybody who does any research whatsoever, and I guess based on what we've seen, I guess people don't really research anymore. But if they do any research, they're going to go, well, we can't book this guy. And even corporate gigs, he can't still get those, right? Based on the exposure that he's gotten, right?
How lazy do you have to be if you're not, if you don't Google someone first? I mean, isn't that's, you know, fact checking 30 years ago is one thing. Now you just type in the name in Google and it's right there. So
yeah.
It's that Forrest girl was ridiculous for doing the article in the first place. But now he can't get a corporate gig. He's too volatile.
I mean, you would think, but it really hasn't been. Here, I think about Dan, right? Where Dan's like, hey, I'm going to still keep doing what I'm doing. Knowing that there's, you know, tens of thousands of people now who know that he's a guy who goes and tries to get into these magazines and newspapers representing himself as younger. He knows he's going to be exposed. If he knows anything, he knows as soon as somebody sees this, they're going to expose him. He's also using his real name. How else is he going to get exposure? So I can't imagine when he was doing this article that there was zero fear that this was with the backlash. Now, clearly, if he'd known he was going to be trending right above Under Armour, right below Billy Joel, he had no idea.
Yeah,
that
he
was going
to
be
number three trending on Twitter. I mean,
that was going to happen, but he had to know he was going to be exposed. It was Forbes.
You're right, though. What is his end game? Because there was, I mean, I said I was talking to JL and Joe DeVito, another comedian. But I thought, like, the Apprentice, the original version of the Apprentice, where there weren't celebrities, Dan would be perfect for something like that, some sort of reality show like that. But then I thought, you know, Survivor had Gen X versus Millennials. So if they asked him to go on, which would he do? Would he try to be on both sides? Would he demand to be the Millennial? Would that? So I don't know, because he seems like that's his, like, surreal life. Like, he needs to be a little bit more famous to be like a C celebrity to get on some shitty sort of reality show. What else does he do? He can't do comedy in comedy clubs. He never could do that. He doesn't have an act. And he can't do corporate things anymore because people are going to Google him and realize that this guy's full of shit. So why would I fire him and pay him this real money?
Yeah, I mean, he really did sabotage himself, because if he just kept doing fake Twitter followers, you know, fake Facebook friends, fake likes or shares or whatever you get, you know, on YouTube, if he would have just kept doing that, his footprint would have looked huge, and he would have been able to continue to dupe these companies, especially these companies where he's speaking a different language, right? Where he's really competing with a lot smaller pool. If he would have just stuck to that. But he is so, and people think he's a narcissist, but that's insane, the idea of thinking he's a narcissist. He hates himself. Why else would he have so aggressively defended himself and just with the venom? And that's because he must think he's just nothing, right? And that's
one of the quotes that I said that didn't make it, I told the guy, I said, at best, Dan is just a bad comedian who lies about his age and pads his resume. At worst, he's a sociopath. And, you know, they say the truth is probably in the middle. Well, it's probably closer to the sociopath.
I mean, I can understand, you know, feeling maybe desperate because there's a giant group and they don't like you. And you're like, well, what's wrong with me? I mean, that I think is where Dan's head is. He's like, hey, I'm one of you and everybody thinks I'm shit. And that didn't make him say, maybe I better evaluate myself. He never did that. He doubled down. Then he would triple down. Then he would quadruple down. And he basically got himself so visible that he can no longer succeed in this ruse. That's exactly what happened. Hey, I don't want to forget my Christmas gift. So let me please make sure that we talk about the best book on how to become a full-time stand-up comedian.
Yeah. But real quick, I want to say, shout out to Nobody Likes Onions listener Daniel Nowak, I think. He did, I'm telling you, I think this is the funniest thing I've ever seen on the internet. We've all seen, what's the Batman movie with Bane? Which one is the one?
That's The Dark Knight Rises.
Yes. So the scene in there where they're in the football stadium, the Steelers are playing, the bomb goes off during the game, it's chaos. And then Bane walks in, he takes the mic and he gives his speech. He snaps that guy's neck. This guy has put Dan's act as the voiceover to Bane. This badass guy with his badass voice comes out. The crowd is horrified. And it's Dan. Hey, everybody, what race am I? And it's, you know, it's every
I'm
time
you
he
what,
starts talking,
I don't I know if I've laughed at anything harder than this. I think it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. So kudos to whoever that guy is, because he's a genius. By the
yeah,
way, it has
me,
like
he's a genius.
It has like 1,500 shares and like, you know, 10,000 likes. It's not enough either. It's so hilarious.
No, it's amazing. But wouldn't it be funny if this actually led to the two of us, JL and Patrick, like going to the Isle of Man, doing comedy, and then becoming like international superstars. The thing that Dan claims that he is, we're on first class flights taking pictures. What that would be a nice end, put a little bow on this story. But we have been, we're going to have, I think we're going to get Ben Collins from the Daily Beast on the show. And someone from radio in the Isle of Man has also contacted us.
It's called Man X Radio.
Yeah. So. We're now international comedians. Thank
and his
you.
Name is Alex Bell.
Okay, that's our Isle of Man contact. Well, I want to pitch a show, Comedy Central. It's, you know, roast battle's huge. How about a comic fight to the death or joke to the death? The loser has to quit comedy. I will challenge Dan Ninen in the first episode right now. I will take on Dan Ninen in the Isle of Man. We each do 30 minutes of comedy. And if whoever loses can never do comedy again, I will make that declaration. Let's make it happen. Rob and Joe Show, be right back. Yo, Rob and Joe listeners, it's time for you to give us all of your money. Well, not all, but at least $5 a month. Become a patron of our show on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Rob and Joe Show.
Yeah, 6 years for free is enough, okay? You guys have been, it's enough handout.
Yeah, come on, people. Earn your way. But what will you get for this $5? You will get a bonus episode each month. New content. It's going to be a different show than the one we normally do. It will be worth it. That's patreon.com/Rob and Joe Show. patreon.com/Rob and Joe Show. Sign up, give us your money. Maybe we'll invest in better equipment. So, you know, we did gifts on the show, and everyone gave real gifts except for me, because I, you know, I'm thinking of the show, not of our friendship. That's more important. And I gave you Dan's How to Make It in Stand-Up book. Is there a page in there about lying about your age? Is that a chapter?
So this book, and I mean this, it might be one of my favorite gifts I've ever gotten. This, I had no idea, you know, because we have a lot of fun at Dan's expense. But, you know, you're like, sometimes we look at it through this microscope and we sensationalize it, or maybe because, you know, we have to go into air and discuss this.
Right.
This is the fucking worst thing I've ever read. I mean, if you read this and you know anything about stand-up comedy, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever read in my entire life. By the way, even if you don't know anything, you're going to be like, what the hell? So let me give you some examples of some of the things that are found in here. First of all, do you know how many chapters there are in this book?
I think he said there's like 15 or something.
Well, there's chapter 1 through chapter 17. But there is no chapter 14 and 15, so it can appear like it's a longer book.
What?
Not
he just on purpose, or just he screwed up?
I don't know. Chapter 13 is Dressing the Part. It starts on page 60. Chapter 16 is Comedy Industry Inspirations, and that's page 62. Now, can I just tell you, I'm just going to jump around to this thing. Comedy Industry Inspirations is a two-page chapter that lists stand-up comics. Okay? Now, there are 20 stand-up comics in here. Of course, the big thing about Dan is working clean. There are people in here like George Carlin, Sarah Silverman. There are people, I mean, they're filthy. Louis C.K.
But who needs a book to know that those are famous comedians? It's like,
now,
I gotta get into music. Here's some of my inspirations, the Beatles.
Oh, well, it's interesting that you say that. So let me tell you right here where it says how to get gigs. Okay. Can I go through that with you?
Yeah. I'm curious. I could use more gigs.
So it says Getting Gigs is the name of this chapter. The first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 pages are listing comedy clubs with their websites. Now, it, but when it lists the website, it's http://www.theboxabq.com/. Okay. The other thing is, I'm gonna read you the clubs.
But that doesn't even realize if you have the internet and you have this book, you're just gonna Google the name of the club when you read it on the book, and then you're not gonna type out HTTP. It doesn't make any sense. Why wouldn't you just have the name of the club there?
Are you familiar with Drop 3, Rob? Are you familiar with that?
No clue.
Well, that is one of three comedy clubs listed in Baltimore, Maryland by Dan Ninen.
Never heard of it.
Let's go here to D.C., if we may. You're a big guy in D.C., right? You've performed there a lot.
I'm huge. I know every spot.
So give me a second here to pull up D.C. By the way, they're not in order, so in alphabetical order. So I apologize. Yeah, they are. They're by city. Here we go. How about... I'm sorry, there isn't anything from D.C. in here.
Nope, don't go to the D.C. Improv.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Yes, here we go. Here are the clubs in D.C. Are you familiar with the D.C. Improv?
I am, yes. It's a little-known club, Connecticut.
Are you familiar with All Stars Comedy in D.C.?
I am not familiar with that.
Are you familiar with Laugh Out Loud in D.C.?
That sounds familiar, yes. I am positive that those last two do not exist anymore.
Are you familiar with gnpcomedy.com?
Nope, no clue what that is.
Well, that is gross national product comedy. So okay. In his hometown, you understand, in his hometown, he lists clubs that either don't exist anymore or never have existed. Do you understand? And you understand this book is only 75 pages long. 8 of it consists of listing comedy clubs. Let me keep going. So then after he does it, by the way, this is in the section where getting gigs. What did you just call? Do I call GNP Comedy and get booked? Okay. So then after that, it says comedy festivals. And he says, here's some great festivals. And he names 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He lists those. Then performing internationally. Now, this is the globe. It's around the world. Okay? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He lists 7 comedy clubs in Hong Kong, London, Dublin, Manchester, Edinburgh, Toronto, and Amsterdam. So if you want to perform internationally...
I'd like to get a Hong Kong gig. I can just call that number and they hire me. Is that how it works?
This is the final entry, and that's colleges and universities.
Oh, I'd like to work there too.
Here are some great colleges and universities for comedy, and he lists, it looks like, somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 colleges.
So he has about 20 pages just listing things that are,
well, if
that are on
if
Google,
I may,
phonebook.
That's it. Now, can I say this? That's also chapter 7. Do you know what the next chapter is?
What is that?
Chapter 9. So that's another chapter skip.
Is it possible that he had to retract things that were said, that people said, get me out of your book? So
I don't know.
So he just eliminated these chapters?
But the next chapter is called Performing Live. And the first section of Performing Live is How to Kill It on Stage.
Well, he's never done that before, so...
Now, you got to remember that he still has this insecurity. And so in every single time he talks about himself, he talks about performing with somebody, a name that everyone's heard of, being in a remote location, getting there, not being on drugs, something like that. Right.
Right.
Anyway, but the next section, and then we'll finish. This is the last thing we'll do about Dan's book. But I'm telling you right now, what did you pay for the book, Rob?
I think it was like $20. Money well spent.
I recommend it. I'm not kidding. I recommend it. It is so fucking hilarious. Dan's best tips for live performing. Would you like to know them?
Oh, I'd love to work on my live performances.
Tell me what you agree. He gives 8 tips.
Okay.
First tip is know your material.
Yeah, that's a pretty good tip.
Here's the second tip. Bring some friends.
No, now, I disagree with that.
This guy, all he talks about is performing for thousands and thousands of people. He says it's
I'm going to do a bringer in Hong Kong. Okay.
It's always good to have a couple of unconditional supporters. And the club owner and bartender will thank you afterwards for the business.
Hey, thanks for getting two people in there. You know what, bringers, they don't... no. If your friends show up to see your shitty comedy, they're not going to want to spend money either. They're just... they're there.
Arrive
they're
early...
They're not good crowd members.
Arrive early and sober. Learn the room. Well, that's Have you ever done this?
By the way, that's a rule for every job. Arrive early and sober. Okay. Yeah.
Learn the room, walk around, and practice speaking if you have the chance.
I've never seen a comic in a comedy club practice the acoustics before doing a show.
And we've worked with some of the... I work with Dave Attell. I've worked with some of the best.
I've never seen a comic get to an 8 p.m. show at 6 and walk up and say, can I test the acoustics? I've never seen.
Next is relax.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's another tip that you should do in any situation. Relax.
Well, I also think that these are people who aren't suited for this.
If you're not a comedian, then yeah, you would probably want to get there super early, get comfortable, know how to walk onto the stage, grab the mic, speak and do it because you've never done that before. Relax. You want to be sober. Yeah, these are all good pieces of advice for someone that's never done comedy. But you know who else doesn't? You know what those people don't need? They don't need comedy clubs in Hong Kong because they've never done comedy. So, who is your audience? Novices who want to become international comedians immediately.
Realize that people want to have fun. By the way, that's completely not true.
They want to laugh.
Don't apologize. Well, yeah, he's right there. You don't walk up on stage and say, "Look, I'm really sorry, I suck."
No. No, no, Dan should apologize. That's the thing. That's the worst advice he's given. With that act, I apologize for making you sit through this.
Here's one that I agree with, Dan. Don't worry if you bomb.
We clearly know he takes that advice. He does not worry one bit about that. He's unfazed.
I'm not going to go through the whole thing. It says here the key is overcoming this is to always have a back pocket joke, an emergency joke that you know will work. As if comics are like, okay, I have this one joke I know will work, and if things don't start going well, I'm going to use it. No, I think they're going to use that. Start doing my closer 3 minutes in.
Yeah, you know what? You know, in your front pocket should be jokes that work also. That's every joke should. The reason you're telling that joke is because it's supposed to work and get laughs and elicit laughter.
There is
my secret weapon. Don't worry, folks. I have a secret funny joke in my back pocket. I'll use it now.
It's so great. There's another time where he breaks down what your set should look like. And he's like, well, when you come out, you know, use your best joke. And then next, use your kind of B-level jokes. And then, I mean, who thinks like this? Do you do that when you put your set together? These are my not as good jokes. And then I'm going to come back up and... It's like how Robbie makes a mixtape.
All right. Well, that was the best gift you got for Christmas, Joe. What was the worst gift you got this year?
I don't know. I don't know of any gift that I got that I didn't really like. And it's not my best gift, by the way.
Joe, I'm leading you into your Scottish.
Oh, geez. What am I thinking? Sorry. The worst gift that I got this year was by friend of the show, Scott Apple. I don't know what to say other than what a fucking dick this guy is, okay? So, you know, Scott 1 year made me a pen, and it's a beautiful pen, meaning it took work, it took care, it took time.
Nice.
And Scott obviously he knows his way around wood. You know, I've been to Scott's house before, and he's got an entire wood shop. It's not like something in his house. It's a set-aside building for him to do woodworking with thousands and thousands of dollars worth of equipment. So what Scott did was he bought me the shittiest gift ever, and I'll tell you what that is in a minute, but he put it in a box. And I know what Scott is capable of. So this box was basically like, okay, I guess I have to do this, but you know, this is what I think of. It is the shittiest, most poorly crafted. Something I would do. So, Robbie, if you were making a box and you were going to put something in, by the way, what he put in it were slips of paper. So it doesn't have to be that sophisticated, right? Or it doesn't have to be that deep in order to.
We're really having a hard time hearing you, Joe.
I'm right up against the mic, Robbie, so I don't know what else to do.
I think it's Skype. It's not Skype.
It is probably Joe's Skype settings. Okay. We can worry about that later. I'm just letting you know.
I like how he said it's Joe's Skype settings, not Skype. It's something that Joe did wrong.
No. Nothing he did wrong.
So back to this gift. So, first of all, the box. What would you put, Robbie, if you were creating a box, what would you use to allow the box to open and close?
You'd have a hinge.
Yes, a hinge, right. But if you were lazy as shit, what would you do instead? If you didn't give a shit about the person you were giving the gift to, what would you make those hinges out of?
Duct tape.
Close. He cut two pieces of leather, you know, about the size of a postage stamp, and he took finishing nails and he pounded them into the box. But it was done with such disrespect that one of the nails, I guess it got caught, so he pounded it down sideways. You understand? Like the nail isn't even, you can't see the head of the nail. You see half of the nail just bent that he pounded in there. Now, in the box.
Which is fine, except that he's shown you he has an ability to do this really well. He has a talent in this area, and he's shown that to you. And so by him doing such a shitty job, he's almost letting you know, look, I could do good. I could do an awesome job with this, but it's just you. So here it is. Fuck you.
Oh, no. This gift definitely said, I don't give a shit about you. So as a matter of fact, the gift itself, his wife said, well, why would you give that to Joe? He's going to hate that. And he goes, well, he is going to hate it, but I think he'll like it. So meaning he knew I wouldn't like it, but he wanted to sell me on it because it was something that he liked. Well, let me tell you what it is. Robbie, do you know what it is?
No.
Okay. Well, it is 150 hours of science fiction novels. Okay. One of the novels is 42 hours and 59 minutes. Okay. One of the books is 43 hours long. So meaning if I listened to it just going to and from work, right, every day, it would take me up somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 months to listen to one book. Which I don't even want to fucking listen to begin with. That's one book. I can't think of anything less considered. By the way, the last book I got, I worked with a guy. His name was Ed, and he bought me Seabiscuit. And I remember he gave me that book, and I'm like, what a dick. I have to read this, right? I haven't read a book since high school. Now you're making me read. I don't want to do this. But I did read it, and what annoyed me even more is if I would have waited maybe 3 years, Tobey Maguire would have told me this story, you know, magnificently, right?
Right.
But I ended up reading that book, and I'm telling you, as God is my witness, I will not listen to 1 second of one of these audiobooks, and I hope he paid a lot of money. Now, I guarantee you he didn't, but, I mean, am I wrong? This is an awful gift, right?
Yeah. Well, how much would I have to pay you for you to actually listen to these books, to use his gift?
So I think
you have 1 month. You have 1 month to do it.
Well, I'm going to tell a story about something I just did, which I'm ashamed of. I don't even want Gramps to hear this.
I already told it.
About paying extra for the ticket. I did that already.
I thought so.
Yes, you told that story.
Okay, so if I'm willing to do that, you now see the value that I place on money. What is somebody going to have to pay me to get me to listen to 150 hours of science fiction? By the way, it's not like Star Wars. It's not like Star Trek. It's not like Aliens. It's not like
the kind of
that
sci-fi that you like. Yeah.
Well, something that somebody's heard of. I mean, you know, something right. That might like, oh, I know these characters. I know James T. Kirk. I know Luke Skywalker. You know, no, none of that is part of this. This is just some random science fiction that he happens to like that's long, long, obviously.
How many total hours?
150. So you understand, you go.
Five hours a day for 30 days?
Well, think about it this way. My work week is 40 hours.
Yeah.
So that's basically a month's worth of work. That's what Scott wanted me to do. He wanted me to listen. And the box isn't even usable. You normally make some kick-ass box. This box is shitty, too. It's not going to last. It's got leather hinges.
What would you rather listen to, 150 hours of these audiobooks or 150 hours of Dan Ninen comedy and interviews?
The audiobook. I mean, I'd rather listen to that. I mean, there's a story that, you know, I don't know. So if they're like, hey, you're going to be alone in a room. You know, I think about that because did you watch The Walking Dead? You did, correct?
Yes.
Remember when they captured Daryl and they put him in that cell and they tried to break him by making him listen to that same shitty song? It was like some sort of 50s goofy song or whatever, over and over and over again. Could you imagine if you're in there and Negan's trying to break you? He's just got Dan Ninen's comedy just pumped in. It never stops.
So you're probably wondering what race I am.
Oh,
great joke for a CD, by the way. Yeah, that's probably worse than that stupid ass song. So you're not going to listen to 1 second. Have you told Scott Apple that you hate his gift?
Yeah, I went out. And I shit on the gift in front of the entire office. Like, I want everybody to know what this guy did to me. And by the way, you know what I gave Scott? I gave Scott a Star Wars T-shirt. Something that he would like from Under Armour, the Under Armour collection. Right? It's the first T-shirt of its kind that Under Armour can...
You can breathe while sitting there watching Star Wars. Very breathable shirt.
But Scott got me. Here's the deal. I got Scott something he would like, and Scott got me something that he would like.
Yeah, when you get someone a gift, it's something that they would like. It's like, I'm not going to buy you a friggin' Washington Nationals hat.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Wrapping this thing up.
Hey, can I say this? Somebody came in, but they called out Robbie by name.
That's because I banned him.
Oh, there's a history with you and this guy.
Somebody who hated you.
I think Skype is saying that, Joe, you spoke too much this episode. I think that's what it is. Very dominated Joe Robinson. So one last thing. I emailed you our newest draft of the 80s murder mystery 1 week ago, and Joe has yet to read it. So, you know, you're not giving me a lot of confidence in my work, Joe.
Well, no. You should not have confidence in your work if I read it and then I don't comment on it, right? The fact
well,
that
I don't know that yeah.
says more about my schedule than it does about your 80s murder mystery. But remember, I even said to you, hey, what about this day? And you weren't available. Like, I'd like to treat it with respect, and I'm excited about reading it. I mean,
I don't think you're excited.
No. I'm telling you I am. I just need to find time to sit down and treat it with respect. But I will read it as soon. I just have to finish these audiobooks, and as soon as I'm done that,
I mean, it's 15 minutes to read it. You realize that I haven't written War and Peace. It's me writing 10 pages.
Right, but I'm gonna pay attention to the jokes, and I'm gonna envision them in my head. I'm gonna sit down, and I'm gonna treat it with respect.
Okay, well, we can't meet up until you've read it. So, I mean, I'm not gonna go over to your house and watch you read it in front of me.
You're not. No,
we can't. We have to talk about it. You have to have read it first. I sent it to Robbie as well. He didn't read it either. So it's fine. You know, maybe I'll send it to Marcus. Somebody, you know, you work on something, you'd like someone to read it within at least 3 months of having written it. But
you also
okay.
sent
already,
me a bunch
I'm
of
already
murder
writing,
mystery graphics to do at the same time, Rob.
I know, and I appreciate you getting that done. Thank you. New show, Beer Baron in D.C. Nice venue right in downtown D.C. February 4th, Sing for Your Life. That's a Saturday night, 9 p.m. You got to go to a special. You got to buy it online. Just go to dielaughingproductions.com or to our Facebook, and you'll see the link. Good show, guys. We'll be letting you know when we're going to have Ben Collins from the Daily Beast on, and hopefully someone from the Isle of Man. That's the show. We'll be on the Mike O'Mara Show this Wednesday, so give a listen to that. I got a show, The Improv, this Sunday. A Sirius XM recording. Check that out. And I guess that's it, right?
That's it.
Later, guys.
Later.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.